What did we tell you? As soon as Sunderland show signs that things are about to get a little bit better, they go and put in a performance like that. This is the Wiseman Say podcast in association with A Love Supreme. James Hunter is in the studio with Gareth and myself. And like Gareth, he was at the game on Saturday, so he'll be able to shed more light on the abject performance than myself and our other guest, Alan Clark.
Sniffer.
Okay. Yeah.
Craig Clark, of course, as you know him, but Gareth, come on, get it in nice and early.
Yeah, apparently Dick Advocaat doesn't like Alan Clark.
And apparently I am Alan Clark.
And you are Alan Clark, we were told at the weekend. A source close to the club told me that Dick was demanding the sacking of Craig for a piece that he did in the Chronicle. I think it was
Chronicle,
probably,
eh?
Sorry, the...
steady
yeah,
on.
Yeah, wouldn't write in that rag. Yeah, Dick took exception to Craig's column. I'm going to say column. I'm going to get sacked by the Echo. Chris Young's going to be on the phone going, you're out.
Well, that's great.
If I'm interested in the Chronicle, James, is there anything going? Basically, I think Dick was probably being tongue-in-cheek.
See, how he said it, though.
Out.
Tell us the story like you told
no,
us.
No, I'm not going to tell you the full story.
He came in and demanded to know Alan Clark.
Alan Clark doesn't exist.
It was Craig who he meant, and then he said he should be sacked.
Yeah,
and then came back later and asked when it was
going to
happen.
Yeah.
He did, yeah. Later on, apparently, he's a bit of a callback on his gag. Very dry sense of humour, Dick, obviously. It's a bit like Stuart Lee thing, probably football.
See, we knew this negativity was going to come back to haunt you, Craig. It's coming back to haunt you from the top now. Yeah, I'd be worried.
Who's really positive about what's going on at Sunderland?
Wait until he listens to this and gets back in touch.
You wish, Stephen. Yeah.
He hasn't got time. He's
I don't wish,
busy.
Actually. Why would I wish?
Too busy cracking wise, I think.
Too busy sharpening his blade to come and find you.
I wouldn't want him around either place to listen to this, because then if I confront us, I might back down totally and go into my shell, which wouldn't be a good thing.
I've been confronted many a time.
There you go, it's obviously a regular
come on, well, we don't, we're not in a hurry to talk about Bournemouth, so if you want to give us an example, that would be great.
Have you got any good stories?
Have you got any?
More so in the old days.
Right, okay. Are you saving it for the...
I've seen one of my journalistic colleagues lifted bodily from the floor by a player for giving him 6 out of 10.
It wouldn't have been a Sunderland player, would it?
It was.
His score's too high, 6 out of 10. Secondly, he probably couldn't get near him, probably trying to pick him up. Which Sunderland player was it?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if I could possibly mention his name. Yeah. But if you think about big Brazilian defenders...
It's all right. We've heard stories about him.
We have.
I'm sure Chris gave Kabul a 3 in the paper, so he's a big lad, Kabul.
Yes, but again, as I will reiterate the point, he's got to get near him, hasn't he?
True.
But do you want to start with Kabul? Because I sympathise with Kabul a little bit. I'm not defending his performance, but I thought the way he went to try and win that ball from Callum Wilson when the ball wasn't there to be won, I thought was a result of his sort of newly found confidence in a way. I can't remember what he did before that, but he either won like an imposing header or he won a great tackle. And I remember turning around to my friend, we were watching it on the telly, and I just commented again. I reiterated how well he was playing at the moment. And then obviously his head's gone totally after that. But you know,
played well for 3 minutes.
Well, I know, but you
fourth
know what,
minute.
You know where I'm coming from? It's almost a way. As a defender, you get told. I remember being told from a very young age, you can't win every ball and you need to know which ones you can't go and get. And sometimes you get a bit carried away with your own confidence and you go and do it. And I think give credit. I think Wilson needs more credit than he's been given for rolling him the way he did as well, because it was old fashioned centre forward play almost.
It was, but it was a basic mistake from Kabul. You don't step in like that ever. You know, you stay touch tight, goal side, and he could never have rolled him like that. So I think that was a basic error, in fact. And I think that's what wound him up for the rest of the game, which is why he ended up getting sent off, you know, for two fouls on Wilson later in the game. I think that mistake haunted him really through the rest of the afternoon.
Do other Premier League defenders defend like this? It doesn't seem like it, does it?
There's a bit of a problem, isn't there? Like with the defence in general.
What?
Sorry, I'm trying to.
So you want me to
reposition the microphone now? turn it around a bit because he's too much on the side. Great listening.
This is fantastic.
We're not going back to edit it out either because we're under time restrictions.
That's why we didn't do a sound check.
Time restrictions.
Yeah, having, like, a great idea.
Craig, Craig asked for a coffee as we're about to start recording. Yeah.
Well, you can tell. Listen, it was knackered.
Demanding he wanted a rider. He didn't want any brown M&Ms. Also,
we're trying to do anything and get off the subject of the Bournemouth game, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, Kabul, right? You say about confidence. I mean, he's 29 year old. He's played for one of the sort of when he was at Spurs, they were sniffing around the top four. Come on, like mentally, you would expect him to be better than getting carried away at his age with his experience and putting challenges like that in.
Absolutely.
But there's also a definite issue. There was a moment where Van Aanholt was once again left 2-on-1. I talk about this every time I'm on here in pretty much every article that I write. And
not anymore.
Well, that's over. So I have to say it more with me words. And he's standing there sort of like someone runs round him like, I don't know, like a 1-2. And he's like putting his arms up like as he's chasing back, like, where's the help? And it just needs to be a fundamental change in the setup of the team because it's, the defence are too exposed and I think that's leading to individual errors. And I don't think you can play that midfield away from home.
Well, do you think there's an argument? Well, I said to you, I know, when you came in, Craig, and I said off there, that you get almost paranoid as a fan thinking, well, these players are not putting the effort in. You know, some people take it too far, don't they? Like, oh, well, I used to work down the bloody mines and all that, you know, where some of the older fans go on. But I think it's interesting to hear what Advocaat said after the game.
Listen, I have no secrets. After the game, I said to them, listen, I will start thinking about myself. What do I wrong? What are we doing during the week? But I think you have to think about yourself as well, because the way we started, you cannot do that on this league. Even against a team, with all respect, they don't have more quality than we have, but they have the spirit and they know what to do. And we knew also what they have to do, but the sharpness was by the other side better than ours.
Okay, Jim, so Dick Advocaat saying there in, you know, reading between the lines, he thinks if Sunderland players go out and every one of them gives 100%, puts 100% application in, we don't lose that game to Bournemouth. That's what seems to be the repeated pattern here, with respect to sides like Norwich and Bournemouth.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that Sunderland have got better players man for man than Bournemouth, Norwich. You know, these teams that they've capitulated against so far. The problem is getting the balance right. I mean, there's a number of factors. Obviously, Sunderland's new signings arrived relatively late in the day. They're still playing catch-up for that. That meant that he's messing around trying to find the right 11, trying to find the right tactics, trying to, you know, basically do it on the hoof. And all the time while the season's going on, you don't really have much, you know, margin for error. And Sunderland are finding that out. I mean, for 80 minutes they played pretty well against Bournemouth, but the problem was the game was already lost. Yeah. You know, or maybe that's a little bit too harsh. Had Defoe taken his chances before half time and had Lenz's goal not been incorrectly disallowed, you could be level after 55 minutes. I mean, and then it would have been interesting to see how Bournemouth had responded, having lost a 2-0 lead at home, but it never happened. So it's if buts and maybe,
even if that Lenz goal had counted, I think that would have been a test.
They'd have been on the ropes a bit, wouldn't
it? I think because Sunderland were playing really well at that point, and I mean that decision is an absolute shocking decision, really.
But you can't start playing when you're only 2-0 down. That's the problem, isn't it? That's the essential thing.
I mean, we were talking about on the way
over. It's not from the start of the game. They've suddenly played three games: Swansea, Villa, Tottenham, where they've played okay, and it's as if they turn up at Bournemouth and think, well, you know, we should win this one without putting us in effort levels.
I don't know. I think
you were there.
I think after 3 minutes, you know, the goal goes down, and then it's that fragile confidence again. And then I know there was some question marks. People were saying maybe they could have closed Richie down a bit quicker, but I think that's a little harsh.
It's been hypercritical, isn't it?
I think you know that's a real, like, that's an unbelievable goal. I mean, that's. What a strike.
You just got to hand it to him.
I know, you just got to hold your hands up and say, I mean, that's a ridiculous goal. And that's, when you're playing badly, the last thing you need is, like, somebody to, you know, do that and then have a goal disallowed for offside as well. In the game, it just, sometimes,
I'm saying it's fine. It's fine margins.
It all goes against you sometimes, but hopefully.
Well, it doesn't though, because like the week before against Spurs, if they'd got that penalty correctly in the first few minutes, we could have been battered 4-5-0 in that game. So you know we can't.
I mean,
keep
could have had
about
a penalty
this
in that game as well. So.
Yeah, but you go with the well. That's it. We're picking out decisions. Yeah. There's much more wrong than just refereeing.
Definitely is. But you can't. I think in that game with that goal, I know what you're saying about the penalty against Spurs, but you know there's nothing. There's legitimately no like subjective.
No, it was a goal. It should have stood. And it was actually a really good header.
Yeah, it was. I mean,
a lovely ball in as well.
Yeah, but I mean, good quick corner as well. A quick thinking from Barini, who was probably, I would say, aside from Mvira, our best player, I think, across the game. I mean, he's still chugging away there. Not quite as fit as he'd like to be, but in terms of, you know, desire and effort and wanting to do the right things in a game, you can't really question that. And I thought he was a bit unfortunate at times down that right hand side. He seemed to get battered a few times, and the referee was Kevin Friend, surprisingly enough, didn't seem interested in giving any free kicks or anything like that to Barini down that right hand side. But you know, like we played for 30% of the game, and the rest of it, the other 70% was just, you know, not really either not playing well enough in the first half, and then the second half, it's, you know, you're playing catch up at the end, and they got a bit exposed, and Bournemouth obviously could have got that goal at the end where they hit the bar, but
you've got to go for it when you're 2-0 down, and then you're down to 10 men as well. I mean, you're going to get opened up, aren't you?
Yeah, they got, you know.
I mean, you seem to give Jan and Via pardon there. I was going to ask you two about it, because obviously I just watched the game on the telly, so I've asked Gareth and James. I just want to know what the shape of the side was like, particularly midfield, and what went wrong.
Just running after the ball, but that had gone past them. That was the shape.
That's it.
Panic. That's what the shape is technically called. I think I was really frustrated because we were on, I mean, talking about it with Nick Barnes before the game about how this was a real opportunity with our three in midfield to take. They're playing, that's a championship team that we were playing in essence, and they're playing 4-4-2, and they get done like they did in midfield is just unacceptable. Well, like, it's embarrassing, that is.
Problem with two of the players straight away. Toivonen, he isn't a midfielder in the sense that if you're talking about a three-man midfield, he's a forward, and Gomez is, well, you know, he's Gomez, isn't he?
I wanted to ask about Gomez.
Well, he's just the game passes him by sometimes. And maybe
you can't afford that away from home.
They could have done with some physicality in there. I
thought he would have put Rodwell or Cannonball in for this game.
Yeah,
to be
so
honest.
I disagree. I like Gomez. I realise I'm in the minority and I'm willing to accept that. But I like Gomez. I accept that he's one paced and that pace is slow. But but he's good on the ball and he looks after the ball. He doesn't give the ball away very often. He's not to everybody's taste.
Good enough off
that.
The ball, though, James, guess, away from home. Would that be the question?
He's good enough in that role in a 4-2-3-1 because he doesn't have to move very far. He's there to protect the back four.
But do you need Gomez doing that if MV is doing that anyway, which he does really? So do you need two players doing the same thing?
But then 4-2-3-1, it worked really well against Spurs. People were happy, so there's no surprise why he didn't change it against Bournemouth.
Yeah, but then. I agree. Like, I'm not surprised he didn't change it.
I just feel like we haven't got enough defensive physicality at all. And so you've got Mvila and the two centre-backs, full-backs, getting their left exposed a lot, charging up the pitch. You're not really giving much else defensively. Maybe Barini, because he does track, but you're not going to get much out of Lens. You're going to get nothing out of Tafoe going backwards. Toivonen doesn't look interested defensively. And Gomez, I don't dislike him, I just don't know that he's the right man in that game. Yeah, like, it just felt like that's a team that can be peeled open, especially with a bit of pace in an opposing side.
I think what it showed was how much they missed John O'Shea. I mean, John O'Shea makes his own fair share of mistakes and can be blamed for certain things, and certainly has been last season. And a lot of people were quite happy on the opening day to see Quartez and Kabul in there rather than John O'Shea, but when you now look at the stats, I mean, Quartez and Kabul have started three games together and Sunderland conceded 9 goals in those outings, and you know O'Shea and Quartez have looked better, and O'Shea and Kabul have looked even better again, but but Cabool and Quartez doesn't work as a
partnership. You look at where the goals come from as well, and I mean, the first one comes from a terrible clearance from Pantilimon that goes out for a throw-in, and then they concede from that. You know, I mean, if you want to keep the ball, that's fine, and you're giving it back to Pantilimon, but the distribution's just not good enough. Like, I really like Pantilimon as a goalkeeper, but I mean, they're going to have to play out from the back because he can't kick it. Like, he can't kick it long. He doesn't kick it well.
The last game, and I think, as far as somebody commanding the box and as a presence, he's the best keeper I think I've seen here, where you feel so comfortable the ball going the box, and that's a big part of goalkeeping. And then what we said is he doesn't get down on some low shots and his distribution isn't great, but then if he did all those things, it's the same argument again. He wouldn't be playing for Sunderland, would he?
No.
You have to take some things over others, don't you?
I just don't think he's...
So would you have him an only player?
No, I think he's better than him, but I don't think he's... I just think we've had other goalkeepers who've been better than people think Pantilimon is. I just don't think he's quite as good as people think he is. That's all. I don't think he's bad. I just don't think he's...
I think he's
I mean, the best goalkeeper from a footballing point of view in the Premier League doesn't even get a look in, and that's Victor Valdes at Manchester United.
Has he not gone?
But
no, I don't think. Did
they keep him in the end?
He's stuck there in the end. But he's the best footballing goalkeeper, because at Barcelona he played on the edge of the D.
Yeah.
Basically, he's a sweeper. He's not the best shot stopper.
Get him in.
De Gea can do it as well, I suppose, up to an extent. Anyway.
But I mean, really,
not a big fan of De Gea. He makes too many mistakes.
I really like him. I love the way this keeps diverting away from the ball. We're just like different types of goalkeepers. We're doing anything to change the topic of conversation.
If you can't kick a ball 60 yards when you're a goalkeeper in the Premier League consistently,
that's a problem.
And that is something that happens.
And it isn't just like...
It's like horrible clearances.
They drop in the D in our half.
And it's not pressure relieving because when you get like the bits and pieces, and if you don't pick up the second ball, you're under pressure again. They're better off trying to play out from the back. I think so. They've got to find a way to do that maybe and try and do that. When you've got Mvira in the team, I don't really see that as a problem, because I think, you know, he's somebody who you can probably comfortably pass the ball out to from the back, and he'll not make mistakes like we saw maybe Catamol make when we played out from the back a lot under Poyet. So I think that's something they need to look at, because if you're giving the ball away immediately as you've got it back from the goalkeeper, then that's how they conceded the first goal.
I mean you're right about where the goal came from Pantilimon, but I still think that from a throw-in midway inside your own half, you cannot concede a goal where within about three, maybe four touches after that throw-in, you know, the ball's in the back of your net. You can't do that. There was enough time to retrieve that situation. I know it stemmed from Pantilimon's clearance.
Yeah, yeah.
But they still shouldn't have conceded.
You can't ever pin blame on one person. Obviously, Kabul's the most obviously culpable because his challenge is pathetic. But it comes from a movement, things happen, multiple crapness across, it's like a collective. It's like I don't think either of the fullbacks have covered themselves in glory, but it's not their fault that they've been as bad as they've been. I think
Barini's come in and held out.
Yeah,
but I mean, even
because he's going to track.
But Billy Jones had an absolute stinker at the weekend.
I was going to say I think Yedlin will be rubbing his hands now.
We are going to talk about that, but I would certainly give
Van Aanholt more room than Jones, because Jones is putting less impressive performances than at least Van Aanholt. You've seen him do it.
I said before, the thing is with Van Aanholt, he does obviously terrible things at times, whereas Jones is like just like quietly rubbish.
We asked after the Spurs game if that was his limit, because we were saying he had a decent game.
Yeah, he was all right.
But
solid 6 out of 10.
We asked last Monday on the show whether there was a concern that was his limit, and it possibly appears so with respect to him.
Maybe. I mean, we know that...
Did West Brom let him go if he's...
We know that DeAndre Yedlin is going to play tomorrow night against Man City. But Dick Avocat's already made it clear that Billy Jones will play on Saturday, so he still considers him ahead of Yedlin.
Yeah, until he scores a hat trick.
Yeah,
have some of that.
It's scoring a hat trick
and then conceding nine from that side of the pitch.
Scoring a hat trick counts for nothing.
Yeah, well, before we get on to all that, because we're going to talk about the Man City game, so it saves us from talking about this for 40 minutes. So I just want to ask, before we move on from Saturday's game, I think I need to ask about Jermaine Defoe. We've had many debates about him on the show. Two good chances at Bournemouth. I make a three in a row now in two games. Important goals too. Important chances too, where the goals would have changed the games.
One of them was offside, wasn't it, I think?
Was it?
Yeah, the header was offside. Was it? Okay.
But two. It was still a chance he should be putting away.
Yeah, okay.
But just still,
I mean, that's a
Callum Wilson had one chance first half.
That's the thing that annoys us about Defoe times is his, you know, this insistence, his attitude through games sometimes isn't, I don't really like his, like his body language and stuff, and then when he gets the chance, if you're going to like sort of start berating people every time they don't play a clean through on goal, when you get clean through on goal, you've got to score and say, listen, that's what happens if you put us in. But when he misses, he's not, it doesn't exactly, you know, if you put the ball through, well there you go, you've had it, you've had your chance, and you haven't taken it, and it's a problem. I think I think Shearer actually highlighted in the match of the day, they're the chances you got to take. Like, I mean, in the Echo piece did before the game, I was talking about how, you know, we've seen this so many times before, going to newly promoted teams, and our record against newly promoted teams over the years over the last few years is diabolical, and you know, this is a chance for Advocat there to you know, really lay Marga down, say these are the players I've brought in after the Spurs game, take it on. And we've just again had another one of those performances where you're just like, well, like typical, just exactly what you expect, and it's frustrating. I want to, you know, the players have got, they should be just wrestling control of the game and just taking at the opposition when it's someone like Bournemouth. And and they've got a left winger who's their third, a left winger playing at left back who's third choice left back, and like, with, you know, I mean, that's a prime area that you've got to capitalise on, and it's him who's up the other end getting past Jones and causing him problems, and it's just embarrassing. I think it's embarrassing, like, to lose, like, no I'm going to say the cliche, having said that, no disrespect to Bournemouth, having said that, to, you know, Dan Gosling in central midfield, he was a Blackpool, and for them to win that battle in there is just, I mean, I don't know how that can be acceptable. I don't know how that's okay. It's not okay, is it? I mean, it's just terrible. How can you lose
there's,
a game?
There's something just depressing about being shown how to be clinical at the top level by a side who's just won their first ever game at the top level, isn't there? But there's something very familiar about it, isn't there, also?
It is. It's embarrassing.
Because, I mean, we go back to what I mentioned about Defoe there. I don't want to... We've been accused of being harsh, well, Gareth has in particular, of Jermaine Defoe previously. But I guess at this level, James, I know that's a cliche as well, at this level you need to do better and all that. But, I mean, Callum Wilson showed there, he's had one chance, scored it in the first half. If we go back to when we first signed Stephen Fletcher, where would we have been that season without that little spurt of goals? We probably went down, because it was a nail. It was a season under O'Neill, wasn't it?
I think he had now, about six shots on target,
and he scored them all, didn't he? So that just shows how important that is, because we stayed up by, what, 2 points or something that season?
Yeah. Well, I mean, since you guys are at it, I'll suck in a cliche as well and just say that, you know, of the Sunderland team, there's nobody that you'd rather those chances fall to than Defoe. He's you know, got the best record. He's the best finisher at the club. He didn't, against Spurs and against Bournemouth, he had chances, and as you rightly say, he didn't take them. But who else would you rather be on the end of those?
That is what I was thinking, actually.
Barini?
Is Barini a great finisher?
I don't know, that's what I'm asking. Do we know?
I don't know that he is. He's not really played through the middle. Never mind that, a lot of his goals were penalties when he played for us last time.
But if you think of some of the ones, he's goal at Wembley and he's goal against West Brom, he was put through.
It's different. Defoe's got a record of scoring goals.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
That doesn't mean to say
really
that someone else can't come through and be better than him now. But what you've got to remember with Defoe is he's not like that clinical. He scores a lot of goals when he's given a lot of chances, and you're not going to get that in the Sunderland team. He just isn't. The way it's set up, it's he's not going to get loads of chances. He used to score quite a lot of goals in bursts as well. He'd score hat-tricks for Spurs and that, and then he wouldn't score for quite a while. Like, it can be a bit misleading looking at someone's goals per game record,
look at the pattern, the way they come. He's a goal scorer and he will score, but it's a bit maybe like Papas Cisse at Newcastle. Like he did it in a spell and then it stopped. And he's not a lone striker either, and he's struggling for them in that role. And just, I don't know, there's just something not right about it. But because we didn't really solve the problem in the summer, and we bought Barini instead.
No.
I'm not sure I don't know how to solve it.
I think the positive sign from Sunderland's point of view is at the start of the season, everybody expected Sunderland's biggest problem this year would be not scoring enough goals. They have looked threatening. Even in these last two games, they've created chances and they have got a finisher in Defoe, albeit he didn't do it in those two games. More worrying for me is the goals that they're conceding, as we've already covered.
I was going to say the creativity is at what cost? You know, other managers have been quite negative. I know the change in personnel is quite significant. They have moved on now. We can't keep saying it's those Bruce signings anymore because most of them have gone. But he has definitely set up in a way that's more, I don't know, like expansive. But it's certainly exposing them defensively. And yeah, we are looking more threatening, but we're conceding really pathetic goals and far too many of them. And maybe he does need to take a step back, drop the defence 5-10 yards deeper and just start again. Maybe put a bit of physicality in midfield.
They've got pace to get out now in Lens. Barini, I guess, is quickish. So
Defoe's not slow either.
Yeah, they've got options to hit if they need to get out if they are deeper. I mean, that's what we were saying on the way. Well, maybe he just needs to put the brake on slightly and just try and, while it's not working, maybe just try and temper it a little bit, redress the balance, and then when they've got a bit of confidence, that's when they'll just naturally get more expansive and they'll start doing things in games.
You're trying to tinker with this balance during the season, and every game counts. You don't really have slack time when you can do this. All these things, as Advocaat acknowledges tomorrow, these things should have been sorted out in pre-season. The problem is that the new signings weren't in place, at the beginning of pre-season.
What do we think is going to happen tomorrow? I mean, I know there's been talk of changes. Do you think Toivonen and Barini will play? Do you think they'll get more minutes?
It's a chicken and egg question, isn't it? You think these players are only going to get better if they play more games?
That's the attitude that Advocaat's taking. So I think you're going to see minimal changes tomorrow. Yedlin, we know, is going to play. O'Shea will have to come in to replace Kabul. Cool. But your new signings, your Toivonen and Barini, Lens and Villa, they're all slated to play.
He may or may not play
Manoni instead of Pantelimon, but you're fiddling around with a goalkeeper. That's not really a big issue.
Well, in what you said there, I'm surprised. I thought he might have made a few more changes just from some noises that seem to be going around today. But do you think? I wonder if that's come back to Yedlin then. I know you were saying like Jones is slated to play.
No,
At
the weekend, yeah.
But if Yedlin, if it's pretty much a full-strength team and Yedlin comes in and does well and Sunderland get a positive result, then that's
he's fitting into the first team rather than like the situation, for example, Kevin Phillips used to find himself in for England whenever he used to play. It was always like a highly experimental team.
Yeah.
And the argument was always, put him in a team with Beckham and people like that to see how he does. Yeah. Now, I know that's a light years away from this example, but that's just what's coming to my head when I'm saying at least Yedlin's coming into a sort of the side you could expect to play the next game, which is what we need to see, because we need to see an alternative in that position, don't we?
Yeah,
I think the problem is we need to see alternatives in a few positions.
Well, we do, but we haven't got them.
Because I'd quite like to see him move Barini into the middle and bring someone else in on the wing
and just drop Defoe,
just for this game, just to try something. And he's not going to play him, he said.
Has he?
That was my thought. I wonder whether you could play Watmore and Lens as the two wide midfielders and play Barini through the middle, but I don't think that'll happen.
No, I think
it's not going to happen because Watmore's not going to play.
Yeah,
so.
It was on Twitter or something.
Again, I mean, getting back to Defoe, it's not the worst idea in the world to play him, because we know centre forwards need goals for confidence. So.
And he got them against Exeter.
Exactly.
He?
Now look at him.
I'd be making minimal zero changes if I could. I'd probably, if he wants to give Gomez more time and put him in there, then fair enough, I guess. I mean, again, I'd probably rather see a bit more physicality in there against Man City. But if he does, then fair enough. I mean, I haven't got a massive problem with him. You know, like he did with the back four, he gave them another chance in the next game. Because if you start, like, you know, picking loads of changes straight away, it's like you've not the confidence. I mean, the confidence is probably battered anyway from the result. But for the manager then to just start dropping and chopping, it's like...
Aye, but it's a cup game, isn't it? So you can get away with, you know, tweaking it a bit. And I don't think Defoe was naturally his first choice for the middle. And now Johnson's become available again, obviously.
Yeah, I forgot about it,
and I mean, like, obviously, you know, aside from everything that's gone on with him, it does give you present you with another option that does give you a chance to put Bavini through the middle and see what he can do. Yeah. Because if he's brought him in to play there, it's probably as good a time as any to give him a chance.
How about for a sense of, you know, for sake of argument, how about play Johnson where Toivonen was playing and play Toivonen through the middle?
Toivonen through the middle is a bit of a...
Just because he'll do it in a different way. He's obviously going to hold the ball up rather than
I don't
be a runner
like,
in behind.
He doesn't like playing there, though, does he?
Yeah, it doesn't seem so.
I know that obviously he didn't show it at the weekend, but I still kind of like the idea of where Toivonen...
I thought Toivonen, you know, I didn't think Toivonen was, you know, part of the problem, really, at the weekend. I think, you know, it's a bit harsh to judge him, maybe. You know...
I thought he did pretty well.
He did all right. I thought he did work hard. Like, I know what you're saying about defensively unsure.
It's not about not working hard. It's just where you do the work. Yeah. And I don't have a problem with him.
And if another area is malfunctioning, then he's not going to get the benefit. Yeah. So everything's got to be working for people.
What you have to bear in mind is that in Europe, you're in European football, attacking midfielders don't do defensively. They opt out. So you either... coach them that they've got to do it, which is what Avakar's in the process of doing with Toivonen and Lenz, or you just accept that they don't do it and you have to find another way to cope.
And which is tough, because maybe less so with Lenz, but with Toivonen, he's never really played in a really good league. At least Lenz has played, all right, it was in Ukraine, but he'll have played Champions League football and stuff, so he knows kind of the pace of higher and like higher tempo football. Toivonen's never really got above that mid-rank in sort of French Dutch league, and
I mean, I've a PSV, I guess, who were a decent.
True, but I've like watched Dutch football like in the flesh, and what you're saying is bang on. It's like watching a friendly, like they just stroll about, knocking about Freedom in the Park, and you're just not gonna get that here. Mm. But he's 29 as well, and it's something we've said about Defoe playing in that left position. Some weeks he's going to be on it. He's going to get chances, he's going to look good. But there's other weeks where he's played a different way for his whole career and it isn't going to happen. I might be being a bit unfair on Toivonen because I don't know a great deal about him. But I think it's going to be hard and it's going to take more time than perhaps we've got to turn him into someone who comes back over. In which case, maybe you're right, James, we need to look at another wave. If he's going to play that far up, maybe you've got to bring that extra physicality in the midfield.
Maybe that's the answer to Gareth's point about why you're playing Gomez and Mvilla as the two holding midfielders and not just one. Maybe he's thinking, well, if Toivonen's not tracking back, then I need two holding midfielders.
I think Gomez is an odd choice in that position, though.
Yeah, I agree.
I think in an ideal world, you'd play Catamol, but Catamol's been so out of form that he's had to go for another route.
He's not going to fit into the way Avocat's trying to play.
What about Rodwell then? What was his performance? He came on a sub, didn't he? What was it like?
It's all right. I didn't see him do anything like ridiculously like notable where I thought, oh, he's changed the game. I just think generally as a unit in the second half they had got up a bit of a head of steam and they looked quite good for that spell when they got the wrongly disallowed goal. I know Rodwell was on the park second half, but I don't know if he was one of the main instigators for the change. I just think they probably couldn't got any worse than they were at times in the first half. I think on Lenz, you know, again, I'd just like to see a bit more from him off the ball, and I'd like to see them playing with a bit, you know, I know it's frustrating, and, you know, as a fan it's the same, it's frustrating to watch and you get annoyed and irritated, but on the pitch I'd just like to see them play with a bit more of a smile on the face, and, do you know, I know it sounds like a daft thing to say, but they're very negative, like the body language is negative.
Confidence, that though.
I don't know. They don't just look like they look like they'd rather be anywhere else at times. They just look annoyed. Lens is a prime example of that. You know, he's just moaning all the time. You know, Barini's moaning. Sorry, Defoe's moaning all the time. You've got players like Van Aanholt moaning on.
You've got much of a team at the minute.
Yeah,
does
that's the thing that frustrates us. I
think you know what it's like when things are going against you and you're losing games and the pressure's on and everything. You know what it's like if you play football, you know, five-a-side on a weeknight. People in your team get frustrated. Yeah. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. Confidence all that comes down. But do you subscribe to the theory, James? Obviously, you're not from the North East originally. That players struggle with this whole concept of playing in the North East because it's such a prominent thing, and this could count for Sunderland and Newcastle if you look at the league positions at the moment, because the problem seems to be the same at both clubs now, where it's almost like you've just said, like Gareth's saying there, the body language is so negative, and it's almost like they're afraid to go out and express themselves.
That's what it is.
And it doesn't happen. It doesn't seem to happen outside of our region.
I think it does. I think you look at someone like Aston Villa.
Mm.
I'm not a big believer in that. I don't think that's a big issue. I can understand why people talk about it, but in my opinion, it's not a big problem. You know, some of these players have played for big clubs elsewhere in Europe or sometimes in this country. You know, and I don't see it being a particularly unique situation. I think that maybe the fans' passion up here is very, very strong compared to other parts of the country. But whether that really has an effect on professional players, I'm not so sure.
Well, I've never bought into it before, but I've only just started thinking about it because the more these sides start to struggle, more and more ex-pros who have played for these sides come out and say it. And then you think there's got to be something in it. Marcus Stewart said it a lot about playing for Sunderland, and I can't remember who was the latest Newcastle player. It might have been Kieran Dyer, was it?
If you think about Marcus Stewart, I remember Marcus when he used to play at Huddersfield, and then when he went to Ipswich, you know, small town clubs in the grand scheme of things, and then you come to Sunderland, who are a big step up from either of those two clubs. Yeah, it's going to feel different, but whether you know, for the vast majority of players that come up to here, I'm not convinced. I mean, you know, look at Patrick Van Aanholt, you know, played at Chelsea. You know, you look
at Newcastle.
It shouldn't affect. It shouldn't affect players. I think that there are issues with, you know, expectations and things which are born out of the history of the clubs in up here. I think that's certainly true, but I don't think that filters through to the players, in my opinion.
No, I think more so now than ever, it's less likely to, because I think players are in a bubble. Like they're just not. There's not really that engagement, is there? Yeah. And I just can't. I think there's something else, like, but if you want to compare clubs like Sunderland, Newcastle, Villa, yeah, historically big in that, but it's the recruitment, and it's the either lack of investment or misplaced investment, and it's still a problem. And like Newcastle, yeah, they might have gone out and spent 50 million quid, but on what? Like, people, it's easy to go, oh, he must be good because he's cost 15 million quid, but you don't really know anything about him. He's come from some European league. You can watch a couple of YouTube videos, but let's be honest, how many people have been watching for them, Mitrovic at Anderlecht, or for us, Lens at Dinamo Kiev? We're only going to learn about them as we see them play. They have to adapt because we've got such a poor core of players to begin with.
From what I've seen from all the signings that Newcastle and Sunderland made actually over the summer, I would say that Lens probably looks the most... the best and most suitable out of the whole batch across both clubs.
Villa?
Oh, yeah, surely. Of course, and VAR. Yeah, of course. I guess if players
Lens
I'm talking about...
Funny. Who paid, but that's what makes the whole thing more
players who paid money, big money for...
I was really impressed with Wijnaldum on the opening day for Newcastle, but obviously I don't see Newcastle, I'm not at the games, but from what I hear from people that do, he's not been great since, but on the opening day he impressed me.
Also I know we've got to wrap it up, but on the subject of fans and whatnot, I thought, like, at the weekend, you know, they kept singing all the way through, and it's a ridiculously long journey, and
they're doing the away games.
I think you know, at the end of that game there was some lily-livered displays from some of the Sunderland players. You know, you've got to go over and acknowledge those fans, and two or three did, but the vast majority kept the distance, and
That's what I'm saying. If they're going to get out of this situation
that they're in at the moment, and it is a situation after six games. They've got to do it together, and they're going to have to go over. And when they've put in a stinker like that in the first half, and as we've seen in the first six games, too many terrible performances, they've got to go over and hold their hands up and appreciate the support that they're being given in that
game. Didn't notice that, Gareth, but if that's right, then yeah, that's very disappointing. I must admit, I didn't notice it at the time. I had my head stuck in the laptop.
This is what I mean about it. That reflects, I think, how little a lot of these players really understand about what it means and why I don't think there is that pressure.
Yeah. The big thing is I just hope now, very briefly before we finish, we've got two tough games, Man City in the Cup and then Man United at the weekend. I just hope Sunderland don't reach October, having without a win in seven games.
It'll be the Newcastle game, we'll both be looking for our first wins.
Because that would mean that you've got to October and the only team they've beaten is Exeter at home. Yeah. After a fashion.
It's normal, isn't it?
It's very much possible, isn't it?
So, yeah, tickets are available for the live podcast in aid of Pop Records. All the money will go to them for their refurbishment and whatnot and development of their lovely little community project that they've got going on at their new venue on Stockton Road. The tickets are available from the A Love Supreme website. They cost £4 each. And the guests will be David Priest, Michael Proctor and Martin McFadden, the LS editor. So yeah, come down to that. It'll be good crack. It's at Port of Call on the 14th of October, which is a Wednesday night.
I was impressed with the speed you got through that there.
Textbook.
Yeah. Well, it's not textbook for you.
No, because normally,
I'm very thorough, but we're low on time, and when it comes to a situation, somehow it's managed to turn into something else. I'm just saying. What he'll do in any situation, I will deliver. That's right. And I deliver.
Like that free kick you would have scored.
Yeah.
Well, terms and conditions are available on our website.
Yeah.
TNC's
all right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Over and out.